With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Well, there we go. Oh, look, a minute early. But that's okay. That's all right.
On time is late.
On time is late. That is correct. Hey, everybody. Yep. Scott Risdahl. It's Make Me Smart, the Friday Daily Edition. I have a drink in my hands. What am I drinking? I am drinking, Beechwood Brewery, the Citraholic, local brewery down in, I want to say Long Beach. Somebody will know. Super good beers. That's what I'm drinking. Ms. Wood, what are you drinking?
Hello, I'm Molly Wood, and I'm having a Paloma. And it is...
What is that?
Paloma. It's sort of like a grapefruity mixer with tequila and lime. And it is super refreshing.
Sounds great.
I got, you guys may recall that I held a little Chrismica in July. Not a little, a large over the top Chrismica in July party. Like I like to do. Yeah. The luau party, by the way, for those who have asked, was also outstanding. And my sister-in-law got me this Paloma mix. Like cocktail mixer, and I finally just busted it out and put some lime in there. Oh my god, it's so lovely!
Nice,
so lovely. I may have added in a little extra tequila because today does not make sense.
You know what I need? I need a YouTube feed. This is going to sound counterintuitive, but it lags what I'm actually saying, right? So my mouth is moving in real life, but it's not on the YouTube.
Oh yeah, you can't.
And yet I want to read the comments because I think the comments are in real time. So. All right. Anyway.
They are.
All right.
I'm hit pause. I can't just handle it. Pause. No. Just hit pause on the video.
Oh, hit pause on the video?
Real-time text support.
Oh, and then the comments keep going?
Yeah, so then the video's not playing. Yeah, you can't be like looking at yourself.
I know. It was freaking me out.
Yeah.
All right.
Just pause the video and then look at the comments.
There you go.
And now you're talking because what people are drinking is wonderful.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure, for sure.
Marvin Ramirez from Redondo Beach, California is having a wee dram of Centauri Whiskey Toki. Which is awesome. Nice. Anytime you're having a wee dram of anything, you're kind of winning. I assume it's not that wee because it's that kind of...
Giorgio says they're not in real time, actually, these comments. I don't even know.
Oh, well,
I don't.
Ish.
Oh, and then, I guess
session
Ben jumped on
IPA.
And said we're in real time. Yeah, that's Golden Road. I went out to Golden Road and did an interview a couple of years ago before they sold to, I think it's Anheuser-Busch, right? Anyway, shall we? Because you
Duncan
know we can read YouTube
coffee,
comments all day.
Chai Rubus. That actually is.
Can I just say that's a podcast idea in and of itself? Just reading YouTube
comments in real time. That would go.
Here's our new podcast.
Bad in
from
a
Marketplace,
hurry.
From Marketplace Studios. Anyway.
I love it. Anyway, hello everyone. Hello. I'm literally just in the Slack looking what everybody else is drinking. Ben Hethcote's having watermelon White Claw. That guy is hip.
Can I just, I want to denounce hip. Here now and forever this whole hard seltzer thing. I'm going to lose some listeners, I'm sure, but
I'm
like,
only
going to
denounce the one that Tony Wagner is drinking, which is called Bubble Party Hard Tangerine Fiesta.
Oh.
I have thoughts. But okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right. Let's leave everyone alone and talk about the news, because okay. that's what we have the drinks okay. for.
Let's Woo-hoo, do that.
Dive on in.
So I just want to point out, just in the interest of fair play, since the U.S. Postal Service has gotten a lot of heat on this podcast the past, 10 days or so, that the Postmaster General and CEO, the first CEO, actually, of the U.S. Postal Service ever, said today to Congress, here's the quote, election mail will be delivered, and the quote is, fully and on time. So he is now on record, I think, in opposition to the president of the United States, who is convinced it's not going to be taken care of, mostly because he doesn't want to fund it. But I think it's important to get that on the record. I also think, and this is a sort of a two-parter for me, the U.S. Postal Service is justifiably proud of its record in providing mail service to all points hither and yon in the United States. And they said today on their Twitter feed, despite expected increases in mail-in voting, we anticipate election mail will account for less than 2% of all mail volume from mid-September until Election Day. So I think we now have the Postal Service on record as saying they can do it. And I just put it here as a timestamp for when the President of the United States says, we're not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to pay for it. It's going to be fraud, all of that good stuff, because I think it's important to mark these things contemporaneously, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was there was pushing on that front. It took pushing, I think, for him to eventually say,
God, yes.
We will classify ballots as above first class mail when they're sent. Yeah. So, yes, I like that. Good. Good contemporaneous notes, if you will. And actually, on my news item today is on a slightly similar note, which is this idea of preparing for the very unprecedented situation in which we find ourselves, which is preparing for the inevitability, at least it seems so far, that the president of the United States is going to dispute election results that don't necessarily go his way. So there was a story in the New York Times today about Facebook, which is essentially scenario planning for a time when President Trump or his campaign try to use the platform to delegitimize the results of the election. Which I think we can all agree is a weird conversation to be having.
It's a completely weird conversation to be having. But how are they going to do it is the question.
They have discussed, among other things, having a kill switch to totally turn off political advertising after Election Day, saying that the ad, because currently, anybody can buy an ad that says anything politically or otherwise, and they said those ads could be used to spread misinformation. I don't know if we're talking about, going to the extent where they would shut down his accounts. His account.
That's the question, right? Can you imagine the hullabaloo if Facebook or Twitter or whoever it is shuts down his account? Because, let's be clear, he would be spreading specious and false information. You know? Man.
Yep. And I think Facebook is struggling with it sounds like, and again, this story is mostly from people within Facebook who are speaking anonymously, but people who say they were in these meetings or have advised the company say, the company is a little worried about well, what do we do if a post suggests that mail-in voting is broken or encourages people to send in multiple copies of their mail-in ballots? Yeah. But those might be framed as a suggestion or a question, which, people who traffic in
and he'll
people
say,
who
ooh,
study.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he'll say it was just a joke. Or I was just, I don't know for sure, but many people have said that mail-in voting is broken.
Man.
And, people who study disinformation say it was just a joke is a huge, it's a tactic. It's literally a tactic to sort of gaslight, I guess, for lack of a better word. It's weird times. It's weird times.
It is weird times. I keep going back to that interview that Kimberly and I did when you were out with the guy who, once again, whose name I can't remember, from MIT, from the MIT and Caltech Voting Project, talking about the blue shift and how blue ballots come in later because of a whole bunch of reasons that he gave us. And you could see that totally playing out, right? That come midnight East Coast time or 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning East Coast time, right? And, you know, 10, 11 o'clock out here, it looks like Trump has the votes. But there's so much more to come because of this blue shift. And holy cow, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Mike, so Erica Phillips coming to the rescue. Michael Alvarez at Caltech on the voter project.
Yes.
It's so bad.
It really is. Like, it just really is. This is not a position in which companies should find themselves, in which the electorate should find itself. Yep. Like, we shouldn't. I don't think it is unreasonable to say that in August we shouldn't be having a conversation about whether a sitting president is going to essentially try to deny, obfuscate, or dispute the results of an American election.
So, all right. So, look,
at least it's only August, and we're talking about it now, though.
Well, yeah, right. Because better to be talking about it now than November the 4th. Let me ask you this, and I ask this question with some trepidation because it could get into perilous ground. Do you watch parts of the Democratic convention? And look, wait, let me just make sure everybody puts me on the hook here. I'm going to ask the same question next Friday as well about the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Did you watch the Democratic convention?
I watched bits and bobs.
Okay, same here. What did you think of the way they dealt with this issue that we've been talking about in this podcast, specifically of voting and getting it out there and what the president may or may not do?
I mean, I do think it is very notable that they early and often said to people, vote early, not often.
Right. That was the thing that got me.
I mean, that was a refrain.
Just once. One time, please.
just the one time.
Yeah.
That was a refrain. And that's also a remarkable development. Like, obviously, every convention, every political convention is used to whip votes. Right. That's the job of a convention is to say, you got to vote. But this convention, almost to a person, framed you got to vote as a pretty existential issue. And literally, it came with advice. Request your ballot tonight.
Send it in early. Sure. Yeah. Yep.
How to do it. How to check. I mean, that is extremely unusual. I mean, and frankly, as far as I'm concerned, Republicans should be saying the same thing at their convention. Use your constitutional right to vote. Request your ballot. Why the fact that we even want to frame it as a delicate discussion, there is nothing inherently partisan about telling people to vote. There just isn't.
That is a much better point. Yes, for sure.
And if you have 100%. Somebody who's not telling you how to vote and making sure that your right to vote is protected, you should ask yourself why.
Molly Wood, nailing it. Let's hit that little
just
button.
Just thinking.
It's a different place, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's a totally great point. Totally great point. Okay, I want to go first because I love mine because number one,
awesome.
Pandas, and number two, the way I originally read this tweet. So there's a tweet that went by in my feed today from the National Zoo. And it says, and I'm going to read it the right way, and then I'm going to read you the way I read it. Giant panda Mei Xiang has become increasingly restless and begun body licking, both signs that labor has probably started. And then they go on to give the link for their panda cam. Okay, so that's great and cool and fun and cuddly. And also, oh, by the way, there was a tweet that went by in my feed this week about a panda keeper out in Chengdu in Western China, like basically trying to rake leaves in the panda enclosure, and the pandas were being pandas and like tormenting.
So
it was
great.
It was super cute.
So
anyway,
great.
So there's going to be a baby panda, we hope, in the National Zoo, which is super cool. But the way I originally read this tweet was, giant panda Mei Xiang has become increasingly restless and begun booty licking. And I'm like, how do pandas lick their booty? I don't understand that. Right? And why is that a sign of that labor's on the way? So anyway, that's what I got. I know. It's tough to get around, right? Because there's, So anyway, so that's what I got.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That one wins.
Yeah. So.
Oh my God. Yep. Also, a baby panda is like kind of what
I know.
We
Come
need
on.
Right now.
Right. That'd be great.
Go, baby panda. Have I told you about my longstanding theory that, look, this is not a totally real theory, but I think once you hear it, you're going to think about it a lot. I have this longstanding theory that pandas might not be real because they're actually just arguably like too cute to be real.
Yeah, yeah. Which actually, it goes to that video of the panda keeper out in Chengdu trying to rake the leaves, and the panda's just completely screwing with her. Totally.
Seriously. Yeah. Like, come on.
I buy that. So I buy that.
I think there's a non-trivial possibility that every panda you see is either a dude in a panda suit or a really advanced experiment in animatronics. Because, like, come on. Come on.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. I like that. I'm totally there.
I don't believe in. I'm a panda truther.
Oh my god.
I just like thank you to Charles Anderson on Twitter who was I have a making me smile for you today, and it is a video from Twitter, like Zanda from the Netherlands posts happy things. Yes. Yeah.
This freaked me out. It's absolutely horrifying, but go ahead.
It's actually like kind of horrifying, but also amazing. It is. The tweet says, this is a myosin protein dragging an endorphin along a filament to the inner part of the brain's parietal cortex, which creates happiness. You're looking at happiness. And the one thing that I learned from this is that endorphins have feet.
Okay, honestly.
It's freaking you out, isn't it?
It's freaking me out. It is freaking me out.
I need to know where it came from. I need to understand if it's like a simulation of this occurring or if this is what it actually looks like. But come on, it's like an adorable, fuzzy.
Or if this is what happens when you get happy.
It looks like the babiest baby Groot with his little fuzzy feet.
Kind of, right? Yeah, kind of. It does have 3.8 million views, though, so people don't want some happiness.
Have feet. I love it. And of course, it's my favorite guy on the internet, Rex Chapman, all over it, immediately responded.
I know. But it does. It's a little disturbing. Let me just say that. That's all.
Happiness has feet. Let it run. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm done. Just making posters.
Happiness has feet. You know, that's the title of this episode. Happiness has feet. All right, we're done. It's Friday afternoon, quarter to four here in L.A. I don't know what it's like in the hellscape up in the Bay Area, but I'm sure going outside is probably not an option for Mollywood. So spare a thought, would you? So a couple of things. Number one, thank you for watching on YouTube, by the way. We appreciate that. Subscribe. If you would, hit that little button, you'll get all kinds of benefits, the biggest one of which is you'll know when we go live. So there's that. Number two, we need some listener answers to the Make Me Smart question, which is, once again, what is something you thought you knew, but you later found out you were wrong about? Send us your answers in a voicemail. Here's my request. 40 seconds. Keep the 40 seconds. Can we do 40 seconds? I think that's fair.
We can do that.
Voice memos, because it's always better to have all y'all than it is to have me just freaking read the copy, because that's what I do professionally, and I don't want that. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Oh, look, the music started. We're done.
For example, something I thought I knew was that happiness did not have feet. But it does. Make Me Smart has been produced and directed by Tony Wagner. All week long, he's also our digital producer. Ben Heth co-produces video with the help of our video intern, Ethan Peretz. I got to give credit to the YouTube on this. They were like, yeah, Happy Feet. It's a movie. Erica Phillips writes our newsletter and the skills that you can consume on your smart speaker.
That's with a Z. Skills and speakers. Charlton Thorpe was driving today down in the studios in L.A. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. Where's Ben? Is he like off? I haven't heard from him in like forever. Senior producer is Bridget Bodner. Week two on the job, I think. The executive producer, who is clearly still employed here because she yelled at me yesterday of On Demand, is Sitar Nieves. Boom.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes, folks. There was yelling.
A little bit. She yelled at me.
A little bit of yelling. Yeah.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.